Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, May 29th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. For months, the Sitka Assembly has been considering changes to its city's sales tax code. Tonight, they could make a final decision. Assembly members will meet in special session tonight to possibly raise the city's sales tax cap and change the sales tax exemption for senior citizens. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
Right now, Sitkans only pay sales tax on the first $1,000 of a purchase. Four votes tonight would raise that number to $1,500. The Assembly also considers a change tonight to the senior citizen sales tax exemption. The revision would limit the exemption to seniors whose incomes are less than twice the federal poverty limit. That's just less than $29,000 for an individual, or just less than $40,000 for a household of two people. The changes also include verification measures, such as a photo ID card issued by the city, which must be shown at the time of purchase. Those issues could play into the bottom line for the city's overall budget. That is also on the agenda tonight. Assembly members will hold another first reading of the budget ordinance, which underwent significant amendments at the last meeting. Last week, the Assembly restored money to fund a Parks and Recreation director and a part-time employee at the city's customer service desk. Cutting both positions would have resulted in the dismissal of two employees. Proposed cuts to the library, museum, and the Convention and Visitors Bureau also were restored. A host of other cuts remain in the budget, including funding for two positions at the police department and a human resources assistant. This is Ed Ronco in Sitka.
The meeting begins at 6 p.m. tonight inside Harrigan Centennial Hall. Tonight's meeting is a special meeting, and so Raven Radio will not provide live coverage. A reporter will attend and provide coverage for tomorrow morning's newscasts. Earlier this month, most of the students in 7th grade science at Blatchley Middle School in Sitka went to the Stargaven Valley to help government biologists monitor the health of the stream. But this was no ordinary field trip. It's part of an ongoing project where students collect permanent data that will be used by Forest Service managers to make decisions about the future of the valley. KCAW student reporter Kate Morse and photographer Maya Rita Williams documented the project and sent us this audio postcard.
What's your name?
Megan Kushner.
And Megan, what are you doing?
We are measuring the pH of the river.
And what is that helping you guys determine?
If the river is acidic or base. If it's certain acidity, then animals will die and can't live in it. If it's a certain base, then animals will die and can't live in it. So we're trying to aim for middle, in the middle of between acidic and base.
Okay, what are your guys' names?
Erica.
Michaela.
And what are you two doing?
We're doing the pebble count thingy.
Yeah, the pebble count station where
we're measuring
rocks and pebbles.
Rocks.
And how do you guys feel about doing hands-on field trips as opposed to just learning from a textbook?
I like it a lot.
It's easier to follow because you don't get bored.
Okay. It's fun walking in the water.
What's your name?
I'm Craig Smith.
And what's your job?
I'm a biologist for the National Park Service.
What inspired you to become one?
Well, I always liked science when I was growing up, and when I went to go to graduate school, I had a choice between becoming a chemist and becoming a biologist, and I discovered that chemists spend all their time in closets and laboratories that don't have windows, and I like to be outside, so I became a biologist.
Like that one?
Yeah.
All right, what's your name?
Brittany.
And Brittany, what are you doing?
I'm looking for bugs.
And what does that help you guys determine?
How healthy the stream is.
Did you learn anything that surprised you?
That the bugs aren't so big as I thought they
were. Right here, right here.
Oh, this thing's gross. Megan, look at this. It's not gross.
Okay. I want to see what they look like in there.
Miss Papoy, as a teacher, what's your favorite part of these field trips?
Just getting outside. And I like to see a lot of the kids who maybe aren't so engaged in the classroom. A lot of times they are out in the field, so that's pretty rewarding for me.
And do you wish you could do more of these projects?
Absolutely.
My name is Tess. I'm a fish and wildlife tech for Fish and Game.
What inspired you to become that?
I love working outside. And you get to see environments like this. They're clean and pristine, and if they're not, you can work on them and rehabilitate them. We do a lot of stream bank rehabilitation, so streams are healthy, and we like to see these good, healthy watersheds.
Do you think it's beneficial for students to come out here and work on the streams hands-on?
Absolutely. It's really important for kids to get outside. Everybody is so connected to their iPhones and iPads these days that it's nice to come out and do a little work like this. And I think it's nice to see kids with their rosy cheeks and they're happy outside. So, yeah.
My name's Zimri. This station, we are putting in logs in the water.
What are those logs going to help do?
Those logs are going to help create habitat for fish. They're also going to oxygenate the water. And, they're going to create a lot of good stuff for the stream.
How do you feel about doing hands-on field trips as opposed to just learning from textbooks in class?
Well, heck, I mean, like, textbooks, you can only go so far. But with these, this is really cool. We should really do more of these.
An audio postcard from Sitka's Stargaven Valley from 7th graders Kate Morris and Maya Rita Williams. To see a slideshow from the Blatchley Stream Team, visit our website, kcaw.org. Over the last several days, we've been bringing you a series on climate change in the Arctic. The northernmost reaches of the globe are where the first effects of climate change were noticed. That includes portions of Alaska. Reporter Joanna Urich has been talking to Native elders in the Arctic. In part four of a five-part series, we travel to Selawik, a community of more than 800 people near Kotzebue.
Looking down from the plane on a bright April day, Selawik glows under white snow. On the ground, people buzz by on snow machines. Some are ice fishing on the river and nearby lakes. In the village, evidence of melting permafrost is everywhere. Houses have cracks in windows and walls. Doors don't close. And the above-ground Arctic pipes carrying water and sewer are far from level as they thread through town. Selawik, which once stood on firm, mostly frozen ground, is now sinking and eroding.
What makes Selawik different is that it's a delta community, and the effects of warming permafrost are being seen in the infrastructure across the whole community.
Michael Brubaker studied Selawik for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. The freeze-thaw cycles that now dominate Selawik became a problem when the sinking ground opened leaks in the connections of the water and sewer utility lines, allowing cold into the insulated above-ground pipes. This winter's extreme cold temperatures froze the village water system, prompting the governor to declare a state of emergency. That was December 28th. Raven Sheldon, member of the Selawik City Council.
Folks here, yesterday was a big day for them because their water and sewer finally went through. It just went through and everybody was doing laundry, cleaning, and they were so happy.
Water and sewer costs $180 a month. The bill comes even when villagers have to cut ice from the river and boil it for water and use honey buckets. Today, men in yellow sanitation gear go from house to house, gathering plastic bags of human manure. To keep the lines from freezing, villagers pay huge electric bills to operate heat tape wrapped around pipes running from junction boxes to their homes. Resident Lewis Skin.
This year, our electric bill went high as $1,600 a month, just so that we can get that heat tape going to keep our water from freezing.
Houses need to be re-leveled annually. Some need to be moved from the eroding river's edge. Many wonder how long the two bridges connecting the village will stand, with the ground sinking and being washed out from under them. Studies indicate that Selawik may be entirely underwater in 50 years. With only a quarter of the town's population holding down jobs, hunting, gathering, and fishing puts food on the table. Bert Griss points to how permafrost melting under the tundra has dried out formerly productive berrying spots.
We row a boat and we pick salmon berries. From this one place, we used to pick 3 60-gallon barrels. Right now, it's so hot, so dry, I'm lucky if I could get 2 cups.
Disappearing permafrost causes erosion on riverbanks, making them wider, shallower, more silty, and raising concerns about habitat for the whitefish, pike, and sheafish villagers rely on to feed their families. Some, like Elder Bert Griss, want to move Selawik to the mountains 17 miles away.
Beautiful, beautiful up there. And there's gravel. That's the solution to the question is, can we come up with funding to do that?
Others like Tommy Ballett, an elder with a Friends Church, are not budging. With a deep belief in God, he takes a fatalistic attitude towards attempts to deal with climate change.
I wouldn't move. This is where I was born. This is where I'm going to die. I don't care if the rest of Selwick is under the water. As long as my house is on top, that's where I'm going to stay.
Ballett turns away at the thought of a price tag no one can even imagine, and the prospect of giving up a way of life in a place where you can step out your door and catch fish all year round. That and the abundant waterfowl and migrating caribou made Selwick an Inupiat paradise until the ice in the ground began melting. I'm Johanna Urich.
A Ketchikan midwife and nurse practitioner pleaded guilty to Medicare fraud and controlled substance misconduct. In a plea agreement, Eileen Small has agreed to serve a year in prison, spend 5 years on probation, perform 80 hours of community service, and pay more than $10,000 restitution. The Ketchikan Daily News reports that Small and her ex-husband Herbert were indicted in February amid accusations that the nurse continued to write prescriptions and bill Medicaid after her license was suspended. Herbert Small pleaded guilty to medical assistance fraud and has agreed to serve 3 years probation and pay restitution to Medicaid. He was the bookkeeper at Eileen Small's clinic, and the pair will formally be sentenced in September. And that's all for Raven News. Here's a quick look at Sitka Zone weather. Today, rain will be developing, highs around 51, with southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour, increasing to 25 miles per hour in the afternoon, higher gusts in the afternoon. Tonight, more rain with lows around 45, southeast wind 15 to 25 miles per hour, decreasing to 10 to 20 miles per hour late, higher gusts in the evening. You're listening to KCAW in Sitka.